Hey guys, good to see you tonight. Hope you guys are having an awesome week. So good to be with you guys. So for those of you guys who are just kind of catching up or maybe new to us, several months ago I ended up in the hospital, had all kinds of stuff happening. I ended up on a vent and life support. I had a lung that deflated. I had several internal bleeds. By God's grace, came off the vent and came off of ECMO and then had air and fluid around my lung. Had to have a bunch of chest tubes put in. I had blood clots. I had a MRSA infection, all kinds of things. And one of the things that many people have very kindly said to myself or to my family is just like, you guys are so strong, you know, or thank you guys for staying so strong, or we never could have made it through that. And man, I don't know how you made it through that. And just a lot of like really encouraging things about us being strong through a difficult time. And I had this one friend as I was actually writing this message that wrote me, and he just said, thank you for staying strong. And I hadn't seen him since he was a kid. I worked at a church. He was like a kid at the time, and I was the middle school youth pastor. And so I hadn't seen him since. So I went to his profile, and I see this ridiculous picture of him. And at first, I thought he took a picture from my page, you know, of, I'm not sure why anybody laughed at that. But and so here is this really strong guy calling me strong. And I just want to make sure I let everybody know, and I made sure he knew that I'm not strong in and of myself, that as amazing as my family is, they're not strong in and of themselves. If there was any strength that you saw during this time, it was God's strength working through us in a time of real weakness. And I just want to let you know that when I was in the hospital, I was so physically weak. You know, there were times where I remember coming off the vent and then I was sitting or laying in the hospital bed. You know that little tray they put next to you where they give you food or whatever after you have surgery? And I remember sitting in the bed, I was laid out in the bed, and I remember trying to just put my phone from like here to the tray, and it was like everything within me to be able to make that motion and get it on the tray. Emotionally, I felt so weak. I remember, again, let's stick with the tray for a bit, you know, when they come in, often the nurses and doctors and the nurses' aides, if they have your food, they'll put it on the tray, and then they'll kind of just, you know, slide it over you, and this way you can eat off the tray. Well, I was so anxious from what I'd been through and some of the medications that as soon as the tray kind of came over me, I felt trapped between it and the bed, and so I just would push it back off to the side and turn it sideways as best I could, and again, I often have the strength to do that, and so I'd have to ask the nurse or doctor to, and eventually they just stopped putting it over me because they knew, oh, Doug doesn't like that, and I would just grab my fajitas off the thing or whatever. I do have to say, both Stony Brook and St. Charles, some legit food, you know? Like, you might see me just hanging out in one of the cafeterias one day, all right? Some pretty good food. The worst part, though, the most difficult part was, of course, they give you the, like, the little apple juices with breakfast, and you got to, like, rip the top off it, you know? And because I was so stubborn, I wanted to do it myself, and I didn't have it over the tray, I would finally rip the thing open, and then it would spill all over me. And then, of course, the nurse would walk in, and I'd say, I didn't wet the bed. Well, at least not right now. This is actually apple juice, you know? And so I remember just emotional weakness during that time. And then coming home from the hospital was just more physical and emotional weakness. And I was so thankful to be home with my family, but to be honest, there were times when I'd wake up, and I would just sit up and like lean over to put my socks on, and I was already out of breath. I would just have to sit and just kind of calibrate my breathing. And then there were times where I would, you know, go ahead and start getting changed, and it would take like a half hour for me just to get changed, you know? And then it was like, all right, I'm going to take the voyage from the bedroom to the couch in the den, and now my wife's got to get my walker. She's got to drag the 150-foot oxygen, you know, thing through the house to me, and I got to get the cannula on, and I'm going to take my time and kind of like make sure I carefully get through the hallway. And then I'd sit on the couch, and when I'd sit on the couch, I could only sit normally for about 20 minutes because after laying in the hospital bed for 2 months, my back was all messed up, and if I sat too long or leaned back against the couch, I kind of would still get sore, and I actually still have some of that going on, so I turn on my side, but I could only turn on my left side because my right side was still healing from one of the chest tubes, and I also had a fear about turning on my right side, which you'll understand by the end of the message, and so I would kind of go back and forth between those two positions, and it was just so much work, and I felt so weak. And then, you know, of course, if I had to get up and go to the bathroom or, you know, go to the cupboard for a handful of Twizzlers, which was very priority right there in that moment, I would again, Kelly, can I get the walker and bring, can you grab my oxygen and walk behind me and make sure I don't fall and wipe out because I'm on blood thinners. And if I fall and hit my head, that could be catastrophic. And so just all of this work. And I remember there were times I would just wake up in the morning And I would just say to Kelly, like I'm so thankful to be home, but this is just so much work, and I just don't know if I have today in me right now. And I had this horrible pain in my chest and my back, and, you know, that's the side the heart's on, and, you know, Kelly's saying, I think you should go to the hospital. I'm saying, I ain't going to no hospital, and we're kind of going back and forth a lot about this, but thankfully, eventually, I didn't have to go, and we were able to rule out the scary stuff, but still, just like that idea of, you know, ending up back there again, or what if something else just happens to me? That I just had all these fears kind of thrown at me. Somebody gave us a Starbucks gift card, and I don't like coffee, but they have this awesome strawberry lemonade. You got to get it. It's incredible. Joe will make you one. It's incredible. And so as we're, you know, pulling out and I'm drinking this strawberry lemonade down, one of the little, there's real strawberries in it because it's Starbucks. They don't mess around. And so one of the little strawberry slivers went through the top of the cup and like directly into my throat. And so I start laughing, like, I made it through the vent in ECMO, but a strawberry's going to take me out, you know? And I just start to think about all these different fears and the things that could happen. And so I was not strong on my own. I'm not strong on my own. My family's amazing, but again, it was definitely, if you saw any strength, if you saw any glimmer of hope in us or faith or strength in us, that it was 100% God's strength at work in you and me. Because on my own, I'm really weak. And I want to tell you today that on your own, you're really weak. Maybe you can lift 400 pounds or you can do 200 pull-ups or whatever it is. But when life falls apart, that kind of stuff doesn't really help. And I want to tell you tonight, it's actually great news that you're weak. It's incredible news that you're weak. It's amazing and wonderful news that you're weak. In fact, I want you to say this after me. You ready for this? Okay, on my own, I am weak. Say it again. On my own, I am weak. All right, so now you go to work or school tomorrow, and they say, how was church? And you say, I learned how weak I am. It was a wonderful message. You got to check out the podcast. See, we think this is horrible news, right? We've been told all our lives that weakness is a bad thing. And then when we get that idea in our minds, we begin to respond all different ways. One of the things that we tend to do when we feel that weak is we lay awake at night and kind of let the fear of what we hope we never go through cripple us. Right? Because we know we couldn't handle it because we just know how weak we are. But we're not going to admit that. We're not going to say that out loud. And so some of you guys were trying to fall asleep last night and all you could think about was something you hope never happens to you. And it was crippling you. Some of you woke up at around 3 or 4 in the morning. Some of you guys woke up at like 6 this morning and the first thought that hit you was a fear. Some of you guys woke up at noon because you were up till 3. But after the first thought that hit you was that crippling fear of, man, I hope I never go through what Doug went through because I wouldn't make it. I hope I don't see this whole idea of getting to the college of my dreams fall apart because I don't think I can handle that. I hope he or she doesn't break my heart. I hope my parents stay together. I hope my kids do okay in life because I'm a little worried right now. I hope, like, whatever it is for you, those fears begin to cripple us because we so look at our weakness as a bad thing. But what if our weakness is actually a good thing? Another thing that we wrestle with when we are convinced our weakness is a bad thing is we avoid hardship. We avoid really anything that's bigger than us. Anything that we feel disqualified for in our own strength, we kind of just decide, no, I can't handle that, and I'm not going to get anywhere if I try to live that out. And so I'm just going to sit back. And it really ties into what we talked about last week, that there's purpose and mission and calling in every situation that we face. But we so often will look at a really big thing that maybe even God's calling us to, and just say, I'm too weak to carry that out. I'm too unqualified. I don't have the training. I don't have the mental capacity right now. I got my own stuff going on right now, and I just can't pull that off. And so we wrestle with these fears. We wrestle with inadequacy. You know, one of the things I hate most in life is seeing somebody who has tremendous potential and then see them not live up to it. Not because they couldn't pull it off, but because they were afraid they couldn't pull it off. How do you do that when you're weak, right? Like you. And me, what did I learn from almost dying? That maybe the very best time, the most effective time that God can use you is when you're at your weakest. So if you're not a follower of Jesus, you're like, this is weird. You know, this isn't what I thought. Like, I needed to come into church tonight, Doug, and hear that I got this and how great I am and that deep down inside me is all this strength and power. I just got to tap into it. And I got to tell you, you can find a bunch of churches that'll tell you that, but I think that they're lying to you. I think that they're telling you things that are not true. And so I'd rather tell you the truth because you're going to find out something about this beautiful weakness that we walk in tonight. As we look to Scripture, we're going to look at some things that Paul had to say about his weakness and some things that he went through. And Paul, as we saw last week, was this incredible follower of Jesus. God used him to turn the world upside down. He lived back in the first century AD. And we're going to look at a few verses that show some really bad, challenging, way bigger than him type things he experienced. And Pastor Ravone mentioned a few of these a few weeks ago when he talked. But in 2 Corinthians 11:24, it says this. You can read it with me. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was pelted with stones. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers. I don't really get that one. You know, never been talking to my buddies like, hey, guys afraid of anything? Rivers. Like, it's like, just not really how we talk, right? And he goes on. He goes, in danger from bandits, which can we please bring that word bandit back? In danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false believers. I've labored and toiled and often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. So that's quite a list that Paul has of some way bigger than him type situations, right? Now, one of the things maybe you're thinking as you're listening in is, wait a minute, I've been told that God doesn't give us more than we can handle, right? You've heard that probably in church, or maybe you read it online, or you heard a podcast, and somebody once said that. God's not going to give you something more than you can handle. Is that true? Well, we're going to discuss that here in just a few minutes. But here in verse 29, Paul says, who is weak? And I do not feel weak. What Paul is saying is, oh, you guys feel weak, but so do I. And we're like, Paul, but how can that be? You are like, if there was a Marvel universe in the first century of Jesus followers, like you are Captain America or Iron Man. Which, by the way, just real quick, raise your hand if you would be Team Cap. Just go ahead, raise your hand up. All right, if you're Team Iron Man, go ahead and raise your hand. Now, a lot of you are wondering like who I am and what team I'd be on, but I'm not going to tell you. Because some of you take this so seriously, you'd leave the church if I didn't choose your superhero. These people are not real. Just wanted to remind you of that, all right? But we look at Paul and we're like, Paul, you are this incredible follower of Jesus. How can you feel weak? Well, Paul knows something about weakness. Sometimes we forget. He goes on, he says, who is led into sin? And I do not inwardly burn. In other words, he's saying, look, just like you wrestle with temptation and are sometimes led into sin, he's saying, I have those same desires. Those same desires burn inside of me too. I wrestle with that also because there's weakness in his life. Then he goes on in verse 30, if I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. Now, this is not how we live our lives, right? This is really not what we do. None of us will go to work or school tomorrow, and guys in the room, you will not ask your friends how their weekend was, and one of them's like, oh, man, I went to the shooting range, and I, bullseye. Another guy's like, I went fishing. I caught 197-pound fish. It's already hanging over my mantle. Other guy's like, oh, man, I had a grand slam walk-off, right? I just killed it this weekend. And then, how's your weekend? Like, none of us go, well, I went out Friday night with my wife and had some bad chicken. I spent the whole weekend in the bathroom, and my wife and I got into an argument through the door about money somehow, and then I heard like this big mess going on in the kitchen. It turns out my kids like got into the cupboards and took out the flour and poured it all over the kitchen floor, and the one time I came out of the bathroom all weekend was to yell at my kids for what they did with the flour. That's not what we say, right? We got to tweak it, and so we say, well, I had some good quality alone time this weekend, and had a good talk with the wife about money, and my cherub angel children put flowers all over the kitchen floor, right? Because we're not going to admit weakness. We're not going to admit that maybe everything isn't as perfect as Instagram sometimes makes it look. But no, Paul was saying, hey, I'll just be real with you. This is the stuff that's been happening to me, but I'm going to boast about my weakness. I'm not going to boast about all the things I could boast about. And he kind of gives us a list of things he could boast about. But he says, instead of promoting my strength and my qualifications, I'm going to boast about my weakness. Because he knows something about weakness that we often forget. And what I learned in the hospital is that when people say anything about me being strong, I better very quickly remind them how weak I am. Because if there was any strength, it wasn't mine. Paul goes on, and in 2 Corinthians 12, he talks about this incredible experience he had with God. And then he says this. This is kind of like a, of a verse that makes us scratch our head a little bit. In verse 7, it says, therefore, in order to keep me from being conceited because of this amazing experience I had, you know, Paul could have been tempted to think he was the man. He was the Captain America, the Iron Man of the first century followers of Jesus, right? And so because of that, he has this situation where he gets what he calls a thorn in his flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment him. So what he's saying is something way bigger than me came into my life, something that I didn't want, something that was too big for me to handle. And you go, okay, well, what was the thorn or what was this affliction? Well, there's all kinds of theories. Some people say it was temptation. It was an eye problem. It was malaria. It was migraines, epilepsy. It was a speech issue. It was a person, like just the worst person ever came into his life and stabbed him in the back and lied about and cheated on, you know, this and that and the other thing. And right? I mean, just all the things that you could imagine. I don't know which it was, but they all sound pretty terrible. And they're all bigger than Paul, right? How do I know that they're bigger than him? How do I know that it's something he couldn't handle? Because look at what he does with it. In verse 8, three times I pleaded with the Lord, take it away from me. Why would he do that? Because it was bigger than him. If he could handle it on his own, he would have just walked through it, right? But it was bigger than him. And he felt weakness. And so he cried out to God and said, take this from me. Now listen, we ask God to do the impossible. Next Sunday is all about the God of miracles, okay? I'm here today because God did a miracle and he answered prayer. So we believe in prayer, and it's right that we bring him the situations of our lives that are painful. It's right that we bring him our marriage that's struggling, our dating relationship, our purity, our addiction, our money problem, the dream about this college or that. Like, that's all good, that our kids will end up following Jesus. All good things. But Paul here cries out to the Lord, and in verse 9 it says, that God replied to him, but he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And what Paul's saying to us that God spoke to his heart is that there's grace for every single weakness. The weakness that keeps you and I up at night, there's grace for that. Like all those things we fear, all those things that we look at that we know God might be calling us to, but we shrink back because it could be painful, there's grace to enable us and carry us through all of that. The mission that we talked about the last week, the calling, the purpose, there's grace to enable us to live all of that out. But what does it mean that God gives us grace? Well, there's different kinds of grace for different types of reasons, right? One degree of grace is the grace he's given all of us for salvation, right? If you're not a follower of Jesus, you have the opportunity to receive a gift that God has given. It's called salvation. Jesus died on the cross, rose back from the dead, to give you something, to give me something that I couldn't earn myself, right? That's grace. I'm being treated in a way I don't deserve. But there's another kind of grace too. It's God saying, okay, let me treat you in a way you don't deserve so that you can get through what seems to be impossible. God gives us grace just to get through it. He gives us grace and the temperament and the strength and the endurance and the demeanor and the reliance on him that we need just simply to get through it. We have friends that have gone through something really, really hard, and they're mourning a very difficult situation, and they're very real about their pain, but one of the statements that they've made is this: this is awful, but God's grace is undeniable. We've gone through a horrible situation, but God's grace is undeniable. Not just the grace to save us, but the grace to get us through what we're going through right now. And so, yes, the message tonight is about weakness, but it's not like we're championing our weakness, end of story. No, we champion our weakness so that Jesus can come do something great in it. And it says here, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. You see, if Christ's power is going to rest on Paul, then he can celebrate his weakness. If Christ's power could rest on me in the hospital and I could reach some doctors and nurses with his love and hopefully encourage some people, then I'm going to boast in that weakness so that God could do something I could never do. Verse 10, that's why for Christ's sake I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. And then here is what Paul gets that we forget. You might know the verse, but we don't live this so well. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Right? That's Paul's secret. That's why Paul can celebrate weakness. That's why he can look at the difficult situations in his life and just say, it's okay. It's okay. I mean, Paul's the man who saw amazing miracles happen. But if something came at him, of course he'd pray about it. But at the end of the day, he could say, I'm going to have the grace and the strength that I need. Because listen, there's a strength of God that only shows up when we are weak. Sometimes you'll only see the depths of God, His character, His power, His goodness, when you and I are at our weakest. So back to my flexing arm that I showed before. I mean, my friend's arm. You know, not like right now, but like maybe a month or two ago, was the weakest I've ever been in my adult life. You know, now I'm still weaker than I was back in November when I was severely jacked back then. But I'm still way weaker than I was. In fact, I came in here with Joe and Richie and Joey and Andrew and a bunch of people to do setup, Lacey, to do setup on Friday. And as we came in, Richie and Joe and I saw that there was a table in the back and it had this little tablecloth on it, like a little plastic tablecloth that weighs 0.01 ounces. You know those? And so I had to move it off the table and I was going to be just like a funny guy. I was going to go over real dramatic and rip this tablecloth off, kind of like a magician who rips it out underneath the plates and the cups and the silverware. So I went over all dramatic like and I pulled that thing and I didn't have the strength to pull it off the table, the 0.01 ounce plastic tablecloth. Because right now, I'm the weakest I've probably been in my adult life in these last several months. But I want you to imagine for a minute that every time I need something lifted, my buddy's arm comes crashing through the wall like the Kool-Aid man, just ready to do what needs to be done. Guys, here's what I need you to see tonight. Here's what Paul is ultimately saying. Every time you and I need the Lord to come crashing through, there's now this strength so much greater than what would have been there if we just tried to lift it ourselves. And so His strength comes crashing through the wall into our marriage. His strength comes crashing through the wall into our dating relationship. His strength comes crashing through the wall into our college plans, our job plans, our financial situation, our own health. Like all these different situations, now we're seeing this amazing power at work because it's not us, it's the Lord doing something so powerful. You know what I discovered? You know what I learned from almost dying? Ready for this? You want to talk about being humbled? Is that God did more in the 4 months that I was removed from public ministry than all of the years put together that I stood on a stage. Just taken out for 4 months. Didn't have anything to say from a platform. And God was just showing up and He was doing this and He was doing that and He was working in people's lives and He was rallying an army of prayers and He was reaching people that never would have been reached and just incredible things were happening. Listen, I had never done so little and I'd never seen God do so much. Because when I'm weak, then I'm strong. What I want you to see tonight is your weakness is an invitation for God's grace and power. That's why we could celebrate it. Your weakness is an invitation for God's grace and power. And so as we're walking through our days, looking at our weaknesses and hating them and despising them and being told our whole lives, like, this makes you less than, this makes you inferior than someone who's strong and has it all together, which, by the way, there is no one that has it all together. There is no one in their own strength who is actually strong. We all need somebody way bigger than us to come crashing through the wall and flex a bit, right? Now, some of you guys have that objection in your head, all right? I brought it up earlier. Wait a minute. I was told God will never give us something more than we can handle, right? And so I've just kind of looked at every situation in my life, and if it was bigger than me, I figured that can't be of God, right? Well, I know where people get that idea. There's a verse in the scriptures in Corinthians, and it says we won't be tempted beyond what we can bear. But that's talking about temptation, right? So in other words, if I'm tempted to look at something, say something, do something, hold anger in my heart, touch something, like there is, the scripture tells us, always a way out of that. There's 5 exits out of this room. There's always a way out of every temptation that we have, okay? But that doesn't mean that there won't be things that are too big for us in life. And all we have to do is just look at the Bible and we see how true that is, right? Because God says to Moses, hey, Moses, I know like you stutter and you have a hard time talking. You've told me you don't even want to do this. And I know you've been kind of hiding out for a real long time because you murdered an Egyptian. But I'm sending you right back to Egypt to go to the Pharaoh to tell him to let all these people go. And that's a little bit bigger than Moses, no? And then he says to David, oh, bud, I know you're just a teen, but here's what's going to happen. See, I got this whole Goliath issue, and I need some help here, and I'm going to empower you in a great way. And your dad thinks he's sending you with some cheese to take to your brother, because that's the teenage brother thing to do, take the cheese to your brothers. But I'm actually going to do something amazing through you, and watch what I will do. But I know it's a little bit bigger than you. Oh, Mary, I know you're also a teenager, and you're just engaged, and you're kind of excited about all this and gushing over this Joseph guy, but I got to tell you, I have this crazy plan to redeem the whole world, but just hang out in there, Mary, because it's going to get a little bit weird, but just hang in there, because what's going to happen is I'm going to put inside you supernaturally the Son of God, and Joseph's going to think you cheated at first, but don't worry about that, because I got that. I'm going to take care of all that, and then you and him are going to raise the Messiah, the Son of God. It's a little bigger than you, but it's okay, because my grace and power are with you. And Peter, I know you can't walk on water yourself, but I'm out here walking on water. And if you'll just keep your eyes on me, Peter, watch the grace and power I give to you. And Paul, I know that you thought your whole life you could save yourself, but you need a savior. You're going to see how much you need a savior. And you've been persecuting my church, but man, watch what I do to turn it all around, how you're going to travel the world and plant churches and see amazing miracles happen and struggle and go through hardship. But man, am I going to use you to change the world. But by the way, Paul, that's a little bit bigger than you. And you just keep on reading story after story. I mean, who wants a Bible full of stories about a bunch of stuff people could handle? No, we need to see God come through, right? A bunch of weak people, a bunch of flawed people, a bunch of people who have messed up time and time again, a bunch of people who didn't trust God, a bunch of people who would trust God 1 minute and not trust him the next. It's all more than any of them can handle. And what I went through is so much more than I could handle. What my family went through, so much more than we could handle. How do I know that? Because I'm the biggest wimp in the world, especially when it comes to blood and medical stuff. Can't, like, watch a show. Me and Landon, man. Me watching TV as a family and something like some stupid stomach comes up on the screen. They're doing surgery. Me and Landon are thrown up. We're like out, you know. When I was in the hospital, I was having my blood drawn for like the 6 billionth time. My veins had started to collapse all over. They actually had to stop drawing blood from my veins because they couldn't get them anymore. And they had to put what's it called? Yeah, one of them in my arm. And so I'm getting my blood drawn before they put the port in. And the nurse looks at me and she goes, are you shaking like that because I'm drawing your blood right now? Like, she's trying to figure out, am I having some medical issue right now or am I just scared? I said, oh, I'm scared. Like, yeah, I don't like this, right? And I'm looking away. She's like, aren't you used to this? I'm like, you'd think so, but no, because that's just me, man. I'm a wimp. This is the guy, everybody. Some of you remember this, but I don't know that you heard the very end of this story because I was a little embarrassed to tell it. This is the guy who years ago on vacation, my son Landon jumped from one bed to the other and he misjudged the distance and he hit his ankle on the bed frame. And my wife comes running down the stairs and says, we have to go to the hospital. And I was very demeaning and I was like, oh, stop being dramatic. And she turned him around and there was a black vortex in his leg that had no end. And Jimmy Hoffa and Elvis were in there and it was crazy. And so listen, I look at my dad and I'm like, I can't drive. I drove with my head out the window of the car the entire way because I thought I was going to throw up. And this is the part of the story I don't think I ever told. When we got to the hospital, the doctor says, okay, Grandpa and Dad, I need you guys to come grab Landon's leg, and you grab one and you grab the other. And he says, okay, we're going to flush the wound out, right? And he goes, and then we're going to give him a shot in the wound, and then we're going to suture him up, right? And he says all this, and my dad and I go straight white. I mean, looking like we're going to pale, flush, you know, completely wipe out. And the doctor looks at both of us and goes, Dad and Grandpa, go sit down. You're of no use to me, right? That's me, man. You're going to tell me 63 days in the hospital? I'm going to get through that on my own? Nah. Couldn't have done it. God often gives us more than we can handle. What we've got to do in those moments is invite his grace and power into our lives. We've got to say, God, this is too big for me. You know, some of us haven't said that lately. We haven't had an honest conversation with God about the heartbreak we went through, the sickness in our body, the financial struggle, the fear in our hearts about all the decisions we still have to make about life. And we need to just invite him into that weakness, Some of us who aren't followers of Jesus, maybe you've never talked to God before. And it's time just to say, God, I'm real weak. I need a savior. I need someone to rescue me. I thought I had to save myself. This is amazing news. I don't have to save myself. You have come to save me because I'm weak and I can't save myself. And so would you do that for me? And so we invite him into our weakness. And if we will do that, guys, we will discover that there is grace and power for every situation, everything we walk through. We will discover that we're no longer crippled by fear. We will discover that we will stop avoiding the situations that seem too big for us, the ones God's even put on our heart, the ones God's called us to, because we now know we have grace and power from him. We'll start living with mission and purpose, and we are now the strongest we can possibly be. Next week, as I said, we're going to talk about the miracle. We're going to talk about medically what should have happened to me, what was happening to me, what doctors said should have been the outcome, and instead what God did. And I pray that it'll ignite our faith in some great ways. We can pray with real conviction and power about some of the situations in our lives. But this week, I want you to just keep on inviting God into your weakness, having those honest conversations with him. I'm alive today not because I'm a fighter, because I'm so strong, so distinguishedly handsome. Not why I'm alive today. I'm alive today because God did miracle after miracle. And one of those miracles was to heal me, but the other, listen, was to give me the grace to get through the rest. So one night I was FaceTiming my family and I had a chest tube. No, I keep saying that. Not yet. I didn't have the chest tube yet, right? I had this fear about turning one side to the other. I was laying on my back for about 45 days, I think. And I decided I was going to go on my side finally. And so it took me about a half hour to recover when I would turn one way or the other or sit up. Like it would just mess my breathing up. My lungs would kind of start to freak out. And so I'd have to just take about a half hour to kind of calm myself and breathe and breathe and breathe and really focus. And like I talked about in week one, just kind of getting that place with my Heavenly Father where I felt him breathing into me and God would do something where I could kind of function. And so I got on my side. I FaceTimed Kelly and the kids again. Now on my side, just laying there FaceTiming on the phone. And I decided to move back onto my back while I was still on the phone with them. And as soon as I did, I felt like I was getting stabbed through my right side. Every breath felt like I was getting stabbed again. And Kelly saw my face and she said, call the nurse. The nurse came in. They were hoping it was muscular or skeletal. They were hoping it was gas or whatever. And so they're giving me like antacids and this and that. And the nurse is there trying to like massage my back and just work out whatever's going on. And nothing was working. And so they eventually did a CAT scan and they saw that I had liquid and air around my lung. And my lung was partially deflated. It's called a pneumothorax. And so they said, all right, well, we're going to have to put a tube in your chest. You can imagine like a sinking, an iPod or iPhone sinking cable, about that size, not very big. They're going to put this tube in my chest and try to drain the air and the fluid. And you guys know what a wimp I am now with blood and stuff. And they couldn't put me out for the surgery. I had to stay awake because I had been sedated for so long on the vent and ECMO. And so there I am. I got a nurse next to me. I don't know her name. I feel bad. I forgot her name, but I'm just grabbing this sweet lady's hand and like, mommy, don't leave me. Like, just stay here because I'm scared to death, right? And so they go ahead and put that chest tube in, and when they do, they puncture the lung and the lung goes down completely. And I'm like trying to breathe. And they call a rapid response, you know, and all of a sudden this whole other team comes running into the operating room and all the doctors and nurses go out of the room and they're questioning me, what happened and why can't you breathe and what, you know, what's wrong with what's this pain going on? And then they determine that the only way they can fix what happened is to put another tube in me, now in my back, to try to undo what happened. And this wasn't like they made a mistake or something. This just happens sometimes when they're doing these kinds of procedures. And so I love watching all the squeamish people in the audience, like not making eye contact. Everyone, right? It's great. I would be you too. Trust me. See, I can't handle it. I can't handle it. And so they say they're going to give me a tube in my back. I grab mom's hand again. And they go ahead and put the tube in. And my lung starts filling back up with oxygen. But it was so painful. The most painful thing I've ever experienced was that lung refilling. And I'm just literally in this operating room just screaming out. And so my oxygen level goes up a bit, and the rapid response decides I could be taken back to the room. And this pain that I had, they're saying, is hopefully going to go away. And as I'm breathing on my own, it'll kind of heal up, but it didn't. And so that night, every breath I took felt like I was still getting stabbed. And I'm like punching the bed every time I took a breath in pain, just like frustrated and hurting. And the doctor came in, eventually saw what was going on. She said, we've got to figure this out. This sweet little lady, we're going to figure this thing out and get you better. And so they decided that to fix it, they had to put a third tube in me. And this was no longer an iPod tube. This was like about this big and went right in my side right here. And again, I'm awake for this. If you told me that this is what I was going to go through, I would have said, I am going to die. Like, I literally will not survive this. There's no possible way. And so the doctor inserts the tube. Now, the only way, because they don't have like a camera, the only way they can get it in the right spot is to basically measure me on the outside with measuring tape and then measure the tube and mark it and then put it in where they think it needs to go. And so they do that. And about an hour after the surgery, the doctor comes back and he says, I'm so sorry. We actually put it in a little too far. And so I have to pull it back out a little bit. And I said, Doctor, I think the tube is perfect just like it is. And he said, it's really not. And I said, it really is. Just ask Mom. She's right here. She'll tell you. But he did have to go ahead and make that adjustment. And again, man, I cannot handle this kind of stuff. But I'm telling you that there was grace. It was grace to walk through. I'm here, right? There was grace to walk through it. And eventually, it became a time of waiting. Now I had to wait for the fluid and the air to drain. And I thought I was like on my way out the hospital. You know, I knew I had to get stronger, but you know, coming off the vent and ECMO was like this huge miracle. And look at what God did. And I shouldn't have survived this. And now this real kind of hiccup. And now I'm hoping it's going to take a day or two. It took weeks. I'm just sitting in the hospital for weeks, and I'm calling Kelly with tears in my eyes, going, can't do this. You know, there's only so many episodes of Fresh Prince and Mets games from 2015 that you can watch before you lose your mind. And she just kept saying, there's grace for today, hon. There's going to be grace for tomorrow. And as long as you're in there. And in that waiting game, there was the grace and there was the purpose, right? Like we talked about last week, there were nurses and doctors to reach. There were people on the internet hearing our story that needed some encouragement, that needed to see God's strength, not my strength, her strength, our strength. No, God's strength in the midst of the most challenging time of our lives. And one night they decided to move me from the bed to the chair. Like, we got to get you out of this bed. You've been in this bed 2 months. Get out of this bed. And so they literally like basically picked me up and put me in a chair because I couldn't walk yet. And so I'm sitting in this chair and I still have the tube in and everything. And what they did was they decided one weekend, they would test me. They would turn the suction off in hopes that there would no longer be need for anything to come out, you know, liquid or air still coming out. And they could tell if it was or wasn't coming out. And so they did that a bunch of times, and I kept failing that. And they basically said, well, you got to stay longer. And one weekend, they just decided, all right, we're going to leave the suction on all weekend. We're not even going to test it. We're just going to ride the whole weekend out. And I'm just thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm just sitting here. Another weekend wasted, you know. And as they moved me to the chair and then back, a doctor came in and realized that somehow the suction had been turned off. We're not even sure how it happened. And at first they were all upset, and the nurse was upset. She said, I didn't do it. And he's like, I didn't do it, and back and forth. And eventually the doctor goes, this is actually a great thing, because Doug, you're no longer leaking any fluid. There's no longer any air being drained out. And I personally think that when nobody was looking, God just like reached in and was like, thump, just kind of turned off the suction in there. Because now there had been grace, right, to that point. But then there was a new day. And I think that's what some of you guys need to hear tonight. There's grace. There's also a new day. There's a new day for your life. There's a new day for your purity. There's a new day for your marriage. There's a new day for recovering from a divorce. There's a new day for your parents. There's a new day for you. There's a new day for your kids. There's a new day for your siblings. There's a new day for your career and your path and your college and your future, right? But until that day, there's grace. And we pray and we ask God to do the impossible. But until that day, there's grace. And God did the impossible in my situation over and over and over again. I'll talk about that a lot next week. But whatever you're going through today, whatever weakness you have, it's time to invite God into it. Because he's longing to say, all right, let me give you what you need. Let me come crashing through that wall and give you the strength, the grace, the power, the demeanor, the trust, the faith, the hope, the peace, the joy that you need. If you're a follower of Jesus, what weakness do you need to invite God into? If you're not a follower of Jesus and you want to put your trust in him, I'd love for you to pray with me tonight in just a minute. But I hope you're seeing. I hope you're seeing your weakness is an invitation for God's grace and power. Let's pray. Lord, we love you. God, we thank you that you've carried all of us through tremendous seasons of weakness, pain, difficulty, loss, temptation, disappointment, betrayal. God, we could all, I'm sure, if we've been following you for any length of time, we can probably already look back and see how you carried us one way or another. And we thank you so much for that. And right now, God, we're just asking for your help. And I would encourage you now, if you're a follower of Jesus or if you're not, maybe this is the first prayer you ever pray, I would encourage all of us just to take a second and invite God into an area of our weakness. I encourage you to be very real with him. He already knows what's going on in your life. It's not like this is going to be a news flash for him. He knows exactly what areas of weakness we all have. And he loves us and he wants to come and allow his power to rest on us. He wants to fill us with his grace to get through it. He might even want to heal us tonight. He might even want to change dramatically a situation in our life. So look to him now. Take a minute or two and just pray about that.